You guys know the name Zach Kaur? Does that name mean anything?
I do not.
Inside linebackers coach for the Patriots, and their defensive coordinator, Terrell Williams, could not do it because of health. They said, Zach Kaur, you're the play caller tonight. Zach Kaur called the game last night as a young defensive assistant and was amazing. They had one play of 10 yards or more.
Yeah.
They went 1-for-10 on third down. And I know everyone's going to talk about the offensive line. That offense that we saw from the Chargers was completely flummoxed throughout the game.
The offense was flummoxed for the Chargers. The defense was rolling. But the Chargers were confused, kind of like I was. TED Talk was brought to you by Boston Prolotherapy. If joint pain has you riding the bench, do what TED did. Eliminate your joint pain with Dr. Franke of Boston Prolotherapy. Online at bostonprolotherapy.com.
It works, Andy. It's so simple, and it works. And Dr. Al is the best. He's absolutely the best. And like I've said before, if he can't help you, when you call for your free consultation, he will tell you where you need to go to get the help you need. Not a lot of doctors will do that.
Yeah. That faith, that trust is actually almost more important than the treatment. Yeah. Than like, you know, like not getting taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. Oh, at the end, it didn't work. But thank you for paying us. You know what I mean? Like just having faith in somebody to be honest with you, whether it'll work or not. That's awesome. Also awesome is Zach Kaur. And you heard right there, that was Pete Schrager on ESPN actually last night. But listening to that, Fitzy, and I don't know if you picked up on it there, they're like, and Zach Kaur, this unknown guy, had to call plays last night against the He's been calling plays since September. This is not anything new. Zach Kaur has been the play caller for the New England Patriots for the bulk of the season. And we were just talking about it off air. It doesn't get a lot of press, seemingly, certainly not nationally. This is Drake May.
Vrabel's getting all the press, right. Plus Drake May, yeah.
But now it's time for Zach Kaur to get some love, and Pete Schrager is starting to, you know, figure out the story on ESPN. But Zach Kaur was awesome on Sunday night. And, you know, I jokingly said to Dan Ball, maybe we should see if we can get him, even though he's not a coordinator, maybe get him in the coordinator rotation here late in the year to talk to him, because he's doing just a phenomenal job. And I obviously, we don't know exactly, Ted, what the setup is, the game planning, the play calling, the play sheet. We know he's calling the plays.
I think that's by design.
Right. But how do we get to that point? If you remember when Bill was doing all the stupid stuff about the play calling with Judge and Patricia, and he's like, you ask him about the play call or the game planning? Because those are two different things. And, you know, the play call is one thing. That's easy. The guy who called. And he turned it into this whole, fiasco, basically. But there's some truth to it, right? Like, Monday, Tuesday into Wednesday, when you're putting the game plan together, that can be Vrabel, that can be Kaur,
that's everybody putting their input.
Terrell Williams, when he's been in the building, they've talked about he has visited at times. So
yeah, we don't know what I would love to know exactly. Is he zooming in? Is he does he come by? Does he give his does he lay out sort of like a godfatherly overview of how he thinks the defense should attack the upcoming opponent, and then Zach does the fine war planning, if you will?
I don't know if it's just specific. They're not talking about that because it's specifically a unique situation. I don't think anybody wants to tell you exactly how they come up with their game plans, but I think we'd all like to know how much credit we should be giving this guy.
Yeah.
I do think it's interesting that I didn't think it was until this last game. Maybe because it was the defense's best performance of the season. I think it was. And I mean, if you look at the numbers, and it probably would suggest it was, that Mike really gave Zach Kaur, the flowers he deserved. I mean, I wonder why he's been hesitant and not really willing to do that until this game. But part of it might be designed so that we can't really focus in on who to blame if things go bad, or when Terrell Williams comes back next year and things go bad. You can just say, well, last year we didn't really know whose job it was to put the defense together. We just know Zach Kaur called the plays, but there was a lot of guys that were involved in the game planning the week leading up to games.
Right. There's a little Belichickian to it. If you don't know what's going on, you can't really criticize or praise or specify, right? In the end, it's Vrabel's team, right? So it all falls on his lap. Mm-hmm. But I did think it was interesting. Post-game, he did say something to the effect like, Zach should get all the credit he is getting or will get or something to that effect, which has been kind of quiet over the course of the season. But, you know, it could be, as you said, protect him from struggles, because when it goes bad, if you haven't praised him when it's going good, then you're probably not going to rip him when it's going bad, right?
Correct. Yep.
And then the other thing is, I just said this to you off air. So we've been talking about Jaylen Brown taking over the Celtics. What's it going to be like when JT comes back? it's a similar situation in a coaching way. Like, Zach Kaur was just going to coach the inside linebackers. Now he's calling plays on game day against Justin Herbert, and everybody's saying it was so creative that no one knew what the hell they were doing. And then Terrell Williams comes back, and no disrespect to you, but all he does is go back to talking to Robert Spillane in between plays. Like, he's not calling. You know, like, that's a weird world that could come together.
I would not be have a problem with it. I don't know how many people are out there listening right now that when I say, you know, someone above them gets fired, and then they got to take on the work of the person that got fired, but they don't get paid to reflect that those new responsibilities. So I don't know. It, to me, for Zach, if I'm him and I'm looking for a job down the road, I'm using this as my, hey, look what I did with that Patriots defense. So I think it's still a feather in his cap, even though he's not getting the credit outwardly. I think he'll still use it to his advantage, you know, personally and professionally.
So just to clarify, because maybe Pete Schrager's not the only one. Maybe some Patriots fans aren't totally familiar. The 508 said, he is the coordinator. What do you mean? He's calling plays every second. What are you talking about?
Not by title.
He does not have the title of coordinator. Terrell Williams was and is technically the defensive coordinator of the New England Patriots. The veteran, former defensive line coach, was brought on with Mike Vrabel to do that job. He is now dealing with cancer, has been away from the team for most of the season, and Zach Kaur has been given the duty of play caller. Doesn't make you the coordinator. That title comes with money and responsibility, yep. and then you're one step away from being a head coach. Like, he's doing a great job as he's sort of the interim play caller, the interim defensive coordinator, whatever you want to call it. But he's done a great job. I did put a poll up today, guys, at WEEI Afternoons, at Jumbo Heart. I said simply, who is the MVP of Sunday's Patriots wild card win over the Chargers? I said, reply if you don't like these four choices. You can give me something else. But I said, Milton Williams, Ramondre Stevenson, Marcus Jones, Zach Kaur. And you know who's winning?
Who's that?
Zach Kaur. It's tight. 33% for the play caller, 31% for Milton Williams, the stud defensive lineman, 29% for Ramondre Stevenson, who I also thought his run off the goal line after the stand, the catch and run to go from the 2 to the 50 was huge.
48 yards.
Flipping the field there to change everything.
Yep.
And then Marcus Jones. Fitzy, that damn tackle on the 2 yard line, the sack he had, the forced fumble, he did everything in that game. Mm-hmm. He's getting 7% of the vote. Who are you people?
Well, you break up my guy Ladd McConkey, you wag a finger, and you only get 7%. Come on now, people. Marcus Jones, top defenseman for the Patriots.
So the Patriots defense was really good, and we're going to figure out just how good moving forward. Can they string these together? One team we don't need to prove itself is the Texans. The Texans are coming to town. The Texans defense under D'Amico Ryans is awesome. Mark Schlereth said it, best defense in the NFL. They get after it up front. If you watch that game last night, they had a big in scoring a big man touchdown late. They have interceptions. But most notably, Ted, I think it all starts for them with Will Anderson, Danielle Hunter, and those guys coming off the edge, putting pressure on opposing quarterbacks. So, interesting. We just saw Will Campbell and the offensive line have their worst game of the year. Are we accepting that? Was that their worst game of the year on the offensive line, Ted?
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
So, coming off their worst game of the year, they're facing their biggest test of the year, right?
Yeah, I was going to say maybe the Browns game was one of their worst, but it ranks in the top two or three.
Okay.
Worst. Yeah. So they're going to be tested.
Yes.
And they'll be tested over and over and over again, and specifically, do not be in third and long situations.
Because, that was an issue last night for the Steelers and the old man at
there
quarterback.
Yeah.
Poor Rodgers. God, they just took it to him last night.
So that's where I want to take this discussion, because we're just going to be simple-minded, right, in the matchup. It's five guys versus their four or five guys on the front. It's can Will Campbell block Danielle Hunter? Can Will Campbell block Will Anderson? But there's a lot more that goes into it, right? You just talked about it. If you get 4 yards on first down on a run to Ramondre Stevenson, you've taken a nice first step, right, towards helping those guys.
Correct.
If you are running screen passes, if you're getting rid of the ball quickly, if Steph Diggs and Pop Douglas and whoever else is running some routes where they are uncovering, as they say, quickly, it's not all just about Will Campbell and Drake May, right? There's a lot, and, you know, Schlereth put it all more on Josh McDaniels, that this matchup is actually mostly about Josh McDaniels and figuring out a way to deal with that pass rush. Is that fair?
Yeah, though that's very, very fair. So he's going to have to come up with ways. And it's, you know, you say, I've heard people say that, you know, you get to this point in the playoffs, it's not about scheming or plays, it's about players, which it is. However, when you have clear deficiencies or flaws, you have to scheme up, I think, a good game plan, Fitzy, to kind of negate the strengths that are going against your perceived weakness. So I think it's a very big game for Josh. How do you slow down a pass rush like that? Typically, it's a lot of screens and draws and creative horizontal passing plays to get the ball out fast, that kind of stuff. So it is about players at this time of the year, but it also, let's face it, you need to scheme up a hell of a game as well.
Yeah, Zach Kaur is the name that gets all the love for Sunday's effort, but it's got to be Josh McDaniels, followed closely by Doug Marrone this coming Sunday. Everybody get ready to ache, to hurt, to be bruised, to be as dinged up as you can remember. Like, there's no way you go up against Stingley and Pollock and Petre and Anderson and Hunter and these guys that are looking to wreck you and end you and make a statistic and a highlight of you on each and every play and not feel it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So Josh is going to have to do some work. And you know who's going to be, guys, we're going to be paying tribute to the Munfords and the Westovers and maybe, oh boy, can we get Tonga back for this one? Because they're going to need him. If they think they're going to get that extra yard when they need it most, Tonga to the rescue, hopefully.
So the Texans defense last night put together one of their those SID numbers that Dan Ball likes to put in the rundown. The Texans against the Steelers last night are the first defense ever to allow 175 yards or fewer, two third down conversions or fewer, and score two defensive touchdowns in a playoff game.
That's a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Against a Hall of Fame quarterback and a Hall of Fame coach, maybe, if you think.
Correct.
That guy on the other sideline, even though he's out of work now. And what I thought was kind of funny, because it was a dogfight. If you didn't watch, it was 7-6 in the fourth quarter. It's almost like they said, hell, we'll do it ourselves. We'll just score. We'll get the ball for you. CJ, stop making mistakes. We're just going to score. And then it ends up 30-6. But we've been talking about this matchup, I feel like, for like 6 weeks. We started to say, are they going to make the playoffs? Who do you want to see? Who do you definitely not want to see? And this was the not want to see.
Okay. And I was one of those guys. I did not want to face them, if you could help it, the Texans, because of their defense. However.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. That was then. This is now. I'm better with this matchup now. Why? Why, Ted? Why now? Because the defense just played its best football it's played all season long against the Chargers.
Mm-hmm.
Defense is momentum. It's confidence. It's showing you can do it. And then feeling like you go out there and you can do it again and repeat the same effort the following week. So that gives me a lot of confidence. They're going to have the confidence to carry it over into this week. And plus, the Texans, I don't know how many miles it is from Houston to Pittsburgh, but it's a long way. It's 2,000, over 2,000 miles. They had to fly all the way back to Houston. They had to turn around and fly all the way back up here to Boston, which is further than Pittsburgh. That takes something out of you.
On a short week.
So the external factors that I talked about last week being a factor for the Chargers, the cold weather, et cetera, I will say the same thing for the Texans this week.
So
I like them better in the matchup this week as I would have last week.
There's a little bit of me that wants to call you a homer because you're making it suit the situational needs of being pro-Patriot this week. But you know what I actually think is you talk about momentum. Defense is absolutely momentum, and the Patriots' defense has some momentum, and they have reason to believe that can continue, because if they watched last night's game, C.J. Stroud looked bad. Yeah. He might have looked worse than Herbert did against you. The fumbles. Yeah.
How'd he do with the cold weather?
Not great. So, not great.
Dome quarterback.
Didn't feel comfy. And also, guys, might not have his favorite target. If his Binky is out on Sunday, his best, most dynamic receiver.
Oh, that's huge.
Advantage Patriots.
But Fitzy, it's interesting. But is it a wash if our best corner isn't playing?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah, but the difference is, and I know you'll go, what, one day matters? But in concussion protocol, a day can matter.
No doubt.
I think this is an issue for the NFL. This is the Texans getting screwed. This is, wait, their guy's going to make it back because they got to play on Sunday.
Great
point. Our guy won't. Like, if this game were next Monday, and I don't know how it'll play out with Nico Collins and the concussion protocol, but if he comes down to, like, basically a one-day issue – and they get screwed. Now, here's where I'm cynical. I don't think they'll let that happen. I think they'll screw the protocol because, you know, they care about head injuries and protocols when it looks good, when it suits them.
Yeah.
But if they want their stars on the field, do they finesse it and say, ah, you know what, don't worry about the last day of the protocol, get out there. But this whole scheduling thing where you got Saturday, Sunday, and Monday in a short week, and it's part of the travel, too. But more importantly, it's part of if Nico Collins can't play, but he would have played if you had played it 7 days later instead of six, that's a bad look for the NFL. It would be a very good look for the New England Patriots because I think Nico Collins is one of the most physical receivers in the NFL.
Oh, he's a monster. But wait a second. I just want to say, yesterday I asked you if it was fair that San Francisco would have to play such a physical game late in the Sunday window and then have to turn around and play Saturday. And you said, suck it up. That's the way it goes.
Yeah, no. And I do feel that way.
Convenient narrative twisting, Hart.
I feel that way a little bit if you just say, you know, it's a day of rest. But if you tell the teams, listen, we have a 7-day protocol for concussions. You got to do these steps through 7 days, and then you go, well, you get a game 6 days later, so good luck with the 7-day protocol. I mean, no,
it's unfair. That's why I think, Andy, I would not be surprised, Ted, this offseason, in addition to sayonara tush push, I would not be surprised if there's, okay, going forward, there'll be 3 games Saturday, 3 games Sunday, super wild card weekend. And then if you played Saturday, you'll play Saturday. If you play Sunday, you'll play Sunday. And then we just have champ Sunday for everyone.
Yeah, I don't know about that because they care too much about the TV matchups and the money. Like, for example, the Patriots game, everybody seems to indicate if the Steelers had won, Patriots-Steelers would have been the 6 o'clock game, would have been the late.
Oh, 1,010%. By the way, who is the carrying network, Andy, for 3 o'clock Sunday?
I don't actually know the answer.
It's ESPN.
It's on ESPN.
Yep. All my boys down in Houston were worried that it was going to be another CBS game, which they are not fans of Tony Romo down there.
I don't think anybody's fans of Tony Romo these days.
Is he that bad?
They're talking about him being demoted and whether the CBS would do that to bump up
J.J. Watt
and his partner to the one chair. Yeah. No, Romo's been
Ian
bad.
Ian Eagle and J.J. Watt had a great season.
And people are calling out Romo. I forgot where I read it, but one of those media critics in like New York wrote a whole column like he seems lazy, like he doesn't prepare, like he's not ready for the broadcast, and he's not good. He really is.
He got his money and just said, "I'm good.
I'm fat and happy
and happy boy."
He's making $17 million a year to not really say a whole hell of a lot on the airwaves. But Patriots will play the 3 o'clock game on Sunday, Gillette Stadium against the Texans.
I love that time slot, by the way.
Perfect. Okay, why?
I mean, I would rather it be a little smidge later. I just think one's too early. I just think that 3 o'clock window is such a fun time to watch and to play. I think
they'll have half in the sunlight and half in the darkness.
Yeah, that's. I think that's kind of. I love the idea of starting a game in the sun and then ending it with under the lights.
And you'll also be at your best based on that. What did we have that study last week where four to seven, I think, was your best.
Yep.
So you can play the first hour of the game, kind of work the kinks out, and then boom. Once the game hits the declares itself, you're ready to roll.
And then it's perfect for Chicago because they're saying with snow and potential wind, it might feel like it's negative 30. Yeah.
See, can they finally deliver on one of these, though? Last week, I was told it would be a weather game, and it wasn't really the kind of weather game I wanted it to be.
Bones are aching just thinking about how cold it's going to be. We'll see if Mr. Likely MVP is able to perform in those conditions.
Yeah, the old man. See if his bones hurt, and he can't figure it out. Of course, on the other side, you got a guy that some people think is soft as puppy poo in Caleb Williams, sort of a California
quarterback. What's that guy done for Chicago recently, huh?
Yeah, no, he's on a bit of a roll, but you got to finish the deal. He can't do it one game. 617-779-7937. We're going to continue to talk about it, but the matchup of the week clearly is Texans pass rush versus the Patriots pass protection, but also the scheme of Josh McDaniels and how they work around whatever weaknesses they have on the line. Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, maybe we can delve into that because our weekly chat with Brian Hoyer, he's a quarterback. He knows a little something about pass rushes and schemes and all those things. Also want to get his thoughts on the idea that Justin Herbert and the Chargers had no idea what the Patriots defense was doing in coverage on Sunday night. Brian Hoyer here on WEEI Afternoons up next. No disrespect to you, Ted, but if there's something better on a Tuesday than a TED Talk to break down the Patriots game,
question.
It's on the line right now. We go to the guest line to talk to former Patriots quarterback Brian Hoyer about that Patriots 16-3 win. Brian, how are we doing this week?
What's up, Brian?
I'm great. I mean, I'm happy I'm still calling in, and we're talking about a team that's going on in the playoffs. It's a win, and, man, I was fortunate enough to be there in that stadium on Sunday night, and that place was rocking. I was saying there was almost an excitement that you don't know how good you have it till it's gone. And I think people were just so excited to be back hosting playoff game. And when Hunter Henry caught that touchdown pass, I felt that stadium rocking.
So, Brian, let's start. I actually want to start with something that's become a story. Robert Spillane said it post-game, talking to some Chargers. Those guys said on offense they didn't know what coverage we were in 80% of the time. And then Dan Orlovsky tweeted about it. He said the same thing. He had no idea what the Patriots were doing in terms of coverage. What did you see? You're a quarterback. That's how you made your living, right? Breaking down defenses and coverages. What were they throwing at him? How did they make that happen?
I mean, they were spinning the dial, and after I saw those comments, I wanted to challenge myself, so I threw on the All-22, and they were not reinventing the wheel. They just kept it spinning, and so one play would be blitz zero, and the next play would be zone and be a non-traditional Tampa 2, and they just kept the wheel spinning, and I think that's what they were having a hard time with the Chargers. They're having a hard time diagnosing it, and I thought Zach Kuhr and that defensive staff came up with a tremendous plan, and then the players just went out and executed it, and there was blitz, and there was three-man rush, and so it was almost like, let's throw the entire kitchen sink at these guys, which is a great plan until you have to make sure you're all tied together on the calls and all of those things. But look, they didn't go out there and invent like some new defense. I thought they did a tremendous job executing it. But when I threw on the film, it wasn't anything where I was like scratching my head being like, man, I've never seen this before.
I love talking defense, but I want to get to the offensive side. That's your expertise. And I'm just curious. First off, I want to ask you what you would give for a grade to Drake May, and then just kind of break down the good and the bad in his game from the other night, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, look, he even said it after the game, it's not my best. But when I went back and watched the film, you know, Ted, it's never as bad as you think. It's never as good as you think.
Always, always.
And honestly, honestly, other than the strip sack, both of them, like even the interception, and this is coming from a quarterback, like I hate when those tipped interceptions get thrown on our stat sheet, because it's one of those things where, and you know, Bill used to tell us, like, you can't throw it through him. And that was the most obvious statement you could give us. But those things pop up so quick, and he's trying to get to the check down. He's going to the right place. And once again, as I watched the film, there was very few, if any, where I saw like you would mark like bad read. I thought he went to the right place all night. He used his legs when he needed to and really got them out of some sticky situations. And ultimately, the first strip sack, look, you're in field goal range, and I think he can sense people around him. And I get it. He's a big, strong guy, and he can make some of those plays. Sometimes you just got to eat it and go down with the football. The second one at the end of the game, and he got away with it earlier in the game where he held it a little bit on quick game, right? The long pass to Mondre out of the backed up situation. That's a quick game. And they kind of brought this safety blitz. He got him into the right play. The coverage behind it was a little funky, and he was able to get to the check down. I would say this week you're going to go against this Texans team. There's no way you can hold the ball on three-step. Your tackles are cutting. He gets blasted from both edges. That's something that he's going to have to say this week. All right, if I get a quick step called in my helmet and it's not there, either I dirt it at the receiver's feet, or if I can get it to the back and he's there, I get it to him.
Hold on real quick, Brian. You got to give him a grade. I gave him a higher grade than most. I gave him a B+ because of all that. What did you give him? Would you give him?
I mean, if we're talking about his not his best game and he accounted for 320 yards and a touchdown, I get it, the fumbles. I don't really give the interception. I don't put that on him. Okay. I'm going to give him I'll agree with you, Ted, B+. I mean, he's playing winning football. And the thing to me, and this is what we've seen with Drake over and over and over again, even if there's some bad plays, he just keeps chipping away, keeps chipping away. And that throw to Hunter Henry over Derwin James, who's one of the lengthier safeties in the league, more athletic safeties in the league, that was, to me, one of his best throws of the year. He was kind of sliding to his left. Henderson had a great blitz pickup. That's winning playoff football right there.
Brian, I'm curious where you come down on the play. I thought Josh called a great game. I was very proud and happy to see Drake several times take the checkdowns when they were available to him, because a quick flick to Ramondre can turn into a 48-yard backbreaker after the Chargers fail on fourth and goal.
That's right.
But the play call, the double reverse option where Chisholm threw to Drake, did you think that was too much? Was that a little too cute? Because it was open, it was there, like they just didn't execute. But what did you think of that play call?
Not at all. And knowing, having been in the meetings and been in this offense, that play call is only for a certain look. So if you go back and look, they actually alert to that play. They get in that play based on the defensive look. It's a man coverage, which we all know no one's accounting for the quarterback. And so it got a little pushback back where Chisholm was. And man, if it doesn't get disrupted on the front side and he gets a clean pitch and he's ready to throw it, I think it's a touchdown. And so it doesn't, you know, show up that way in the books, but it's the right play call for the right coverage. They just got to have a better job of executing it. And if anything, you know what it does to the Texans this week? We have to be alert to trick plays. Yep. So what are they going over? They're combing through all the trick plays that's ever been called in the Josh McDaniels system, and that's taking time away from practicing the normal stuff. So I thought it was a great call, especially because Josh is never calling those plays and just letting them ride. He's only going to call them in the perfect scenario.
Former Patriots quarterback Brian Hoyer here with WEEI Afternoons. So, Brian, looking ahead, and you touched on it a little bit, but looking ahead, the matchup is the one that a lot of people said, I really don't want to see the Texans defense. Well, you're getting them, and you're coming off not the best game for Will Campbell and Jared Wilson, that offensive line. How do you approach that? As a quarterback, if you were the offensive coordinator, do you have to almost accept, like, listen, we can't hang with them. We can't just block them. Is this a scheme/game plan game for Josh McDaniels to figure out a way to not get his offensive line embarrassed?
Yeah, I think this is the benefit of having a guy who's basically seen every scenario. And it kind of, I wasn't here for this game, but this game was like legendary when we would go up against a great defense, and it would always be referenced in the quarterback room is that Super Bowl against Seattle back in 14 against that legendary defense where they didn't have to blitz at all because they had the pressure up front. And it would just be shown, like, as an example of when I call a quick drop back play, it's got to be 1-2-3 ball. It's got to be, this is what the pre-snap read is. Confirm it as the ball is being snapped. The ball's coming out, and I think that's a conversation that Drake and Josh will have all week long. If I'm calling a certain play, you have to understand the why of it. But I think Josh will do a good job. One of the best ways to slow down a pass rush is try to get the run game going. And I think the different variety of runs, whether it's gap scheme, whether it's zone, whether it's power plays, you know, you mix that up, try to wear those guys down. And early in the game, the ball's just got to come out quick. It's almost got to be one of those where the Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter are meeting back there and the ball's getting out and they're frustrated and they got to go do it again and then do it again. And ultimately too, I would say this, we saw last night, CJ Stroud turned it over. Let them be the ones to make the mistakes offensively. Let them turn the ball over. I think if this is a game, and it could be frustrating, but you have to understand the defense you're going against. If you end every drive with a kick, as cliche as that sounds, whether it's a punt, a field goal, an extra point, and if you have to win another game in a gritty fashion, 17-14 or 17-10, just because you didn't make the mistake and they did, I think that's what you got to do to move on to be able to play in the AFC Championship game.
It's almost like, Brian, kind of like the old game plans when they would play J.J. Watt in the Texans. You know, Tom Brady, I don't think J.J. Watt ever sacked Tom Brady because the ball came out so fast. Similar to that, yeah?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, look, that's got to be a mentality. And now you don't want to take away that aggressiveness. So I could see what would happen is just similarly when you play Cleveland this year and Miles Garrett's out there.
Right.
What do? They wait until he's out of the game to take that shot to Booty, right? Yep. Like there's a little part of that call sheet that says, you know, one of those guys is out of the game. If there's a time to take a chance, that's when the time's going to occur. There'll be a lot of slams and chips, and you'll see the backs, you know, hitting those guys on their way out. I'm sure the tight ends will be involved. I'm sure there might be some toss cracks. I think when you're going against a defense like this, you want to hit them from every which way to Sunday, and you want to let those edge guys know, like, we know you're there. We're going to make sure we handle you early in the game so you don't even think you have a chance of impacting this game.
Brian, what do you think is going on with C.J. Stroud? Speaking of quarterback play, like it seems like it's very uneven. Like he's very inconsistent. Has he regressed? Is it just, you know, a product of the weaponry around him? What do you think's going on?
Well, I think, you know, a few things, right? A new offensive coordinator, which Nick Caley, obviously a longtime Patriot, goes and learns under Sean McVay out in L.A., and I think he's kind of, you know, coaching a system and running a system for the first time and melding some of those things together, which I think is a great philosophy. But, you know, you got to work through that. Then he misses three games due to a concussion. And I actually thought him sitting there and watching Davis Mills and the way Davis Mills operated that offense actually allowed him to have a different view of it and come back and operate. But like you said, last night you turned the ball over. You really put your team at a disadvantage. Now he's lucky that he has the elite defense that he has. And it really, you know, you look at the score and you're like, man, they killed them. But really, they scored defensively twice. So it's just one of those things where you got to look at him and say, is he able to take that next step, right? He's gone to the playoffs each and every year. D'Amico Ryans has done a tremendous job once he's paired up with C.J. Stroud. But what does it take to be the next level of quarterback? And ultimately, it's consistency. So like you said, one game, it's lights out. The next game, it's not so great. And so which quarterback is going to show up? And I would say with the amount of pressure that the Patriots defense was able to put on Justin Herbert, I mean, I felt bad for the guy. He was getting, I don't know how he was getting back up.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that they're going to try to use the same philosophy against C.J. Stroud and see if they can force him into some bad decisions.
So when you look around the league, I'm kind of going through my head here. We're talking about mistakes by May and C.J. Stroud. You watched last night the defensive turnovers. That's a Hall of Famer, right? One of the all-time greats, yep. And Aaron Rodgers. There were a lot of either mistakes made by quarterbacks or great plays made by defenses over this weekend of wild card football. Which is it? Is it really hard to play quarterback in the postseason? Were those mistakes? Or do you think we have a little postseason here that maybe the story might be all the defenses?
Well, there's some great defenses left. That's the one thing I'm looking at, the mountain, so to speak, that the Patriots may have to climb. And I think you're going to play a top three. I don't know where the rankings are, but I would put the Houston Texans, if not first, in the top three. And then you look at the potential of if Denver wins and you win, now you're going to go against another top three defense. And I think Seattle, as long as Sam Darnold, like you said, he's not the one making those mistakes. I think the Seahawks make it to the Super Bowl. So you're looking, and I don't want to get too far ahead, you're looking at Houston, Denver, and potentially Seattle, the defenses you're going to go against. And those are just, I mean, we've always said defense wins championships, right? That's a cliche for a reason. But I think, like you said, ultimately, if you're the quarterback, how do you eliminate the mistakes? How do you not put the ball in their hands? And I think at this point of the year, you'll always give your team a shot to win if you're protecting the football. Now, you can't be, just checking it down and not taking any risks. And I think Drake did a tremendous job with that the other night. A few of the, shots down the field, whether it was to Booty or even Chisholm, I mean, the fact they kind of played a non-traditional Tampa 2 on that play, and he sees it right away and hits Chisholm up the sideline. Like, he is seeing defense so well, and that's what I said. Like, he does get a B+ because he didn't go to the wrong area with the ball. It just, he held it a little long on two plays, and a ball got batted up in the air. So I think he'll improve rapidly like he always does, and I think it's going to come down, as it always does, as who controls the football better.
I just want to go put this, the Chargers game to bed just with one more last question. And just your thoughts on Justin Herbert. I go back and forth with him. When I watched the tape again, I did see guys open, Brian, and I just on the play in which he got just crunched and spit the seed there, he had a guy wide open on the backside. What do you think of his game? And is he a little overrated? What do you think of Justin Herbert?
Yeah, I've always liked him. I remember going back, I think it was either his rookie year or his first year. I can't remember. We're going to play him. And Bill Belichick, who usually doesn't give a lot of people a lot of praise. I mean, he had like a 30-minute tape on this guy and was basically calling him the next Dan Marino. And statistically, if you look at it, there's not many that compare, to what he's done in the early part of his career. But Ted, as you know, like when you get just beat up week after week, that internal clock in your head starts to go off a little bit faster and a little bit faster, and you're not trusting the protection. So I agree with you. There was times where maybe the Patriots brought a blitz and it's like, all right, I got to get rid of the ball, but now I'm going to hold on to it because I know I'm going to get sacked. And I think you saw that from him this year. Now, I give him credit for getting back up again and again and again. I mean, the guy is out there playing with a broken hand that he had surgery on a few weeks ago. But until they figure out a way to protect him, And also, they didn't really have much of a running game. So it's all on his shoulders. There's no protection. The Patriots defense is throwing the kitchen sink at him. It becomes very tough. And I think, Andy, I think your question was, is it bad quarterback play or just good defensive play? I think in the postseason, everything just gets magnified. So if you have a mistake in the regular season, the game stakes aren't as high. Yeah, you're going to point it out, but there's another week coming. Now, every mistake you make is so magnified and is so important to the way the game is going to go. And that's what we were able to see with a lot of these games this past weekend.
Brian, I want to get to this weekend real quick. Not going over all the games, but just one in specific, 4:30 Saturday, A Mile High in the Football Sky, Bills at Broncos. Are you rooting for, I think a lot of Pats fans would probably rather, if they win Sunday, host the Bills as opposed to have to travel to that cursed snake pit out in Denver. Are you rooting for Josh, and do you think he can Superman cape it up against that Broncos defense?
I mean, God, if they can patch him together and keep him healthy for four quarters, and he can play the way he played the other day, I don't know if they have enough firepower. I don't know. I do think his abilities and stressing that Denver defense gives him an advantage. And also, I would say you don't know what Bo Nix is going to show up. Like we just talked about C.J. Stroud. Is Bo Nix going to show up who throws four touchdowns and protects the football, or is he going to give the Bills more opportunities? And the reason I'm rooting for the Bills, so I am in that crowd. One, I do love Josh Allen. I think he's a great player. But two, how great would it be to have them come here in the AFC Championship game and just break their hearts and just make them feel like your window was there, you had it, and now it's come and gone because here are the Patriots, and they're going to beat you in the AFC Championship game to reclaim the AFC East.
Brian, before we get to your prediction for the game, I do need to ask you, fact or fiction, Super Bowl 53, you're the reason the Patriots won.
Good call, Andy.
Fiction.
No, fact.
No. Those guys, like, the one thing is hard when you're the backup quarterback because you're the one guy who doesn't step on the field, right? Even the other guys, like special teams, all of those things. But I took a lot of pride that week in preparing our defense and having been in that West Coast system and having meetings, whether it was with the McCourties or with Ernie and Bill and B Flow, and just kind of giving them as much insight as I could. And to see that performance out there, it was just incredible. And one of the coolest things was Devin and Jason, I think after the fact, did an interview and really credited, you know, the work that I had put in that week. And so, you know, you're a part of the team, but you don't step on the field. But for them to recognize that will always go down as a special moment for me in that Super Bowl.
He's the reason.
You specifically saw the interaction between McVay and Goff and the clock and the cutoff of the headset, right? Basically everything on defense, the whole game plan was because you came up with that, right?
I mean, look, I think the story goes, I was sitting there and it's Tuesday. You have to have an off day. I'm sitting there in Atlanta and I'm just scrolling through and I saw this docuseries that the Rams had done that year. It was kind of like a Hard Knocks, but internally. And a lot of the terminology, I was like, well, I know that play. I know that formation. I know that. I'm like, this is the same offense that I ran in San Francisco. So I felt very confident in what my knowledge of what they were going to do was. And so when I was with Kyle Shanahan, a lot of times he would get into formation, get to the ball, see the defense, and then call the play in. Well, you know, it cuts off at 15 seconds. So if you change after that, you know, now all of a sudden they called the wrong play into the wrong coverage. Mm-hmm. But look, those guys went out and executed and did it. It was a phenomenal game defensively.
I disagree. We need to re-edit the Dynasty documentary. That episode, it's not about Bill. He didn't have a resurgence of his genius. It's Brian Hoyer.
It wasn't the Matt Patricia game plan against the Lions that he cribbed from. And it was Hoyer. It was you who told McCourty to get back and knock that ball out of Brandon Cook's hands, right?
Oh, yeah. I yelled from the sideline, get back.
All right.
Prediction?
Yeah, we need a prediction for Sunday. It's a great pass rush, great defense, and Patriots team that is playing good football advancing. Who's going to win?
I'm going to go 24-17. It's a close one. I think Drake May protects the football and allows them to score a little bit more. I think C.J. Stroud gives us a turnover or two. And I know this, the crowd is going to be a factor. Anybody who's going to be there needs to be loud, make them over-communicate, make them so they can't hear themselves. I go 24-17, Patriots advance. And I'll give you another prediction. They play the Bills at home for the AFC Championship game.
Let's go. Bills. Ted Johnson actually predicted that AFC title game, but in Buffalo earlier in the season. Okay. So he got it a little bit wrong. I like this better. I'd rather see Josh Allen at Gillette Stadium. So 24-17 Patriots over the Texans from your lips to the football god's ears. Brian, and congrats again on winning that Super Bowl for New England. We needed
Great job, buddy.
We'll talk to you next week, Brian.
Thanks, bud.
All right, guys. See ya.
See ya, buddy.
Former Patriots quarterback Brian Hoyer here on WEEI.
Somewhere between 8 and 11 games.
Well, I was going to bust his balls, but he landed the plane. At first, he said, I'm going to go with 24-17, and he didn't actually say Patriots, and I thought he was giving himself the out, just picking a score, but then he did say Patriots later. So Brian Hoyer picking the Patriots to win and then picking the upset out in Denver so that the AFC Championship would be at Gillette Stadium. Ooh, that'd be fun. Coming up next here, we'll react to a couple things that he said. Most importantly, the way they're going to handle that pass rush, Josh McDaniels, the things they can do. That's all next here on WEEI Afternoons.
WEEI Afternoons with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
Is this a scheme slash game plan game for Josh McDaniels to figure out a way to not get his offensive line embarrassed?
Yeah, I think this is the benefit of having a guy who's basically seen every scenario. Nick, one of the best ways to slow down a pass rush is try to get the run game going. And I think the different variety of runs, you know, you mix that up, try to wear those guys down. And early in the game, the ball's just got to come out quick. If you end every drive with a kick, as cliche as that sounds, whether it's a punt, a field goal, an extra point, that's what you got to do to move on.
That was Brian Hoyer here on WEEI Afternoons.
I forgot about that cliche. End every drive with a kick.
Yep.
Snooze fest, but that might be what it takes.
Wait, did you just say Brian Hoyer's a snooze fest?
No, nope, nope. But he's right.
Selling cliches?
It. You know. If
oh, it, yeah.
If you, in, well, in the playoffs, in the weather.
It's
you
not
know.
Totally right. Because if you always punt, you're probably going to lose.
But if you always end up in a, at least points and
right.
field goal.
Right. Because you know. Charlie used to say that back in the day when Brady was being molded. Like, yeah. No one ever lost by punting. Right, like,
right.
You know, don't turn it over. Don't make the dumb play. And there's probably truth in that. And Hoyer was really good because he said one of the conversations that Josh will be having with Drake this week is on the quick ones, the three stops. It has to be boom, 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 out. This isn't the week to like, oh, I saw something. I can make a play. I can do that. Nope, this is not the week for that. This is stick to the script. Stick to what you're supposed to do because – going off the script this week is more likely to probably go the defense's way than it is your way. You're a playmaker. In some weeks, that's great. Certain games, we love that. But this week, you'll get killed.
You know who would just slice this team up if he was still playing quarterback for this team?
TB12.
Can we move on, everybody?
Well, no, but I'm just saying. Like,
he's dead and buried and gone. He's a statue.
But just it, against defenses.
He's a popular air fryer salesman. Thank you.
Pizza Hut.
Pizza Hut.
Oh yeah, what do you think about that?
I actually kind of like that. Yeah, commercial. That when the old lady hits him, I like
yeah,
it.
I did too.
But the guy that was known for eating avocado toast now right. slinging
selling
pizza,
pizza
whatever
Hut.
It takes, man. Whatever it takes.
No,
right?
It's $1 million man. Everybody's got a price.
It's so true.
Cha-ching.
It's so
you mean,
true.
You mean Delta spokesman Tom Brady?
Yeah.
Delta.
When was the last Delta flight?
I missed
you
that. I was listening to the postgame show. I missed that whole thing. You guys were doing that in the postgame.
Oh, the Cardi B Delta. Oh,
yeah. Take them to Tulum.
Yes, Cardi B.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, Stiz, do you have the audio? Let's refresh Ted.
You guys catch me up on this?
Cardi B is, she's entertaining. She's interesting. Yeah. If you follow her on social media, you never know what you're going to get.
She said the season was over, Ted, for the Chargers, and her version of pack the golf clubs for Cancun was this.
Here it is.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what, take them to Tulum. They want to go to Tulum tonight on Delta. Put them on Delta.
Oh my That's God. My favorite
That's
part.
Tremendous.
Delta.
That's tremendous.
Put them on Delta. Put them on Delta.
You know what? Tulum, a little overrated. Went there last summer. Eh.
Brag.
Brag.
I'm more of a Cancun guy. You know?
Yeah, oh, I can
bigger
see that.
Brag.
Yeah, yeah. Cancun.
Not really. Cancun's yeah, no, kind of cheap.
Teddy likes doing the tequila shooters at Senor Frogs.
Yeah. I bet you Ted Thank doesn't you. Do cheap Cancun, though. I bet you do nice
It was
Cancun.
A nicer one, but it was in Cancun.
Five-star resort.
Yeah. Tulum was a little overpricey and a little, come on, Tulum, don't take yourself so serious.
It's
come
no
on.
Saint Lucia, but, you know.
Yeah, right.
you ever, Touché. Ted, you ever go to the Mexican resort, Zihuatanejo, the town in Mexico where they have the end of Shawshank?
I have not. Have you?
No, it's on my bucket list. I've heard it's
there.
One of the most beautiful places on earth.
I feel like it's kind of hard
it's
to
real.
Get to, though. It's like in the middle of the country.
Yeah. We do a show there? Ken, can we?
Please. Great story.
Do a show on the west coast of Mexico at some
Kiss
point.
My ass.
It's a little cold out here. All right, up next here on WEEI Afternoons, it is time for The Drive. We've already got a couple predictions. We've got some game plans. We're going to start to build our way towards this matchup, so do the Patriots have any advantages in this game? That'll be part of The Drive up next here on WEEI Afternoons.